This is the BBC.
On one particular edition of Roundtable, my guests were Michael Jackson and George Harrison. Michael Jackson to promote Off the Wall, and George Harrison was there because he just was about to release a new album. And that was fantastic, and to have them both in the studio at the same time.
3, 2, 1.
Vintage.
Hi, this is Kid Jensen. I was at Radio 1 from 1976 to 1984. Well, I fell in love with radio because I was a great listener to radio when I was when I should have been doing my homework. I was listening to the likes of Elvis Presley and Roy Orbison on the radio, imagining that I could do that. I knew I'd never be a successful professional musician, even though I played in a symphony orchestra. I played trumpet in a band, in a city band, and played trumpet in an orchestra. But I knew that I wasn't really going to make it. But I loved being around musicians and the entertainment that goes with being a musician and the profile you can achieve by not actually offering all that much. But so I got a job because I was also dovetailing with my musical appearances. I was also president of the student council, which meant that I was doing a lot of public speaking. So the two kind of came together at some point. An opportunity arose, and I ended up working on an FM station in a town or city called Kelowna, which is just outside Vancouver in British Columbia. And I had a lot of fun. The program I did was chamber music, basically, and Baroque music. It was called Music for Dining. It used to go out in the dinner hour or supper hour in Kelowna. And it was sponsored by a funeral company. And so the show Music for Dining was soon adapted to not on air, Music for Dying, because I used to play excerpts from Dvorak's New World Symphony, and just to get people in the mood. In the mood for what? Before I joined Radio 1, I was on Radio Luxembourg, and I was there for 7.5 years living, working, and playing records in the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, along with Noel Edmonds and Paul Burnett, who later joined me on, or I joined them on Radio 1, and a character called Tony Prince. And we had a lot of fun, as bachelors will in those situations. Radio 1 to me was not a station I was that familiar with, apart from its legacy, apart from what it did, its importance, the power it had. And we were kind of like the upstarts broadcasting in the evening, and Radio 1 initially was just daytime, and then they moved to evenings as well. But it was an important station. And funnily enough, Doreen Davies and her husband, Derek Mills, who was with Radio 2, came to visit me in the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg quite a few years ago now. And she was very interested in me coming to Radio 1 at some point, but she felt it was important that I try and get a job maybe with one of the local commercial stations in Britain. She said, and she made the comment that you're becoming a well-known name, but you actually have never lived in the area that you're broadcasting to. And that it was important to her that I get some time living in the UK. So I found an occupation in Nottingham, Radio Trent, and I stayed there for a couple of years before, almost to the day and an hour, I got a call from Derek Chinnery, who was then the controller of Radio 1, offering me a position because Emperor Roscoe, who was doing Saturday mornings, went to America. That meant that they were looking for somebody, and here I was. And it was very exciting. It was kind of like, I imagine it would have been like joining the Beatles or something. I did a lap of honor around the streets of Nottingham and was very excited and very happy. And didn't really think that the contract was, because this was the case, the contracts were only about 6 months, 3 months in some cases. And so I was gambling everything, but not really realizing it. The excitement of joining was more important than anything else. I started off on Radio 1 doing the Saturday morning program, which was everything from punk to funk, reflecting the music of the times. And it was a great time to be on air, I thought, because of all the new young bands coming through. And I loved the energy and excitement that the punk rock era brought. So that was me on a Saturday morning. And then I graduated to doing the Drive Time Show, or as it was known, the Tea Time Show, which was previously done by Dave Lee Travis, who had moved on. And so I got that program, and it was fantastic because we did all kinds of things on that program. We had sessions, the way that Peely used to have sessions in the later part of the evening. Well, I knew Peely from before I worked with him because we would see each other at events, and I was doing the kind of music that he was doing on Radio 1. I was doing that on Luxembourg beforehand, and he used to tell me about shows that he had heard me do and the bands that I was championing at the time. And he's somebody that, again, had such a great sense of humor, and it kind of broke the ice in a way. So we got on well right from the start. Michael Hurl, who was the producer of Top of the Pops, heard us in the evenings on Radio 1 and felt that maybe we could make a partnership doing Top of the Pops, which we did. And it worked so well that we were given the live programs, because most Top of the Pops programs back in the early 80s were recorded on a Wednesday and then played back on a Thursday. But with Peely and I, he liked the idea of, I guess, being on air without a safety net. And we did the live ones and tried all kinds of bits and pieces, innovative stuff. Some worked, some didn't. And we just had a good time. And it was born out of Peel referring to the shows that we did in the evenings from Monday to Thursday as Radio 1 Nighttime. And then I came up with an idea that maybe the two of us should be called the Rhythm Pals. And that, so it was the Rhythm Pals on Nighttime Radio 1. We used to, there was no playlist as such. We had a free rein, my producers and me, to play whatever we thought was going to be suitable for the time and if it excited us, and hopefully it would have excited other people, the listeners. So that's what I did. And up until I went to work in Atlanta, because the other thing that my other major interest, apart from being a musicologist, is that I'm a newsaholic, and I always listen to news radio wherever I am. And this gave me an opportunity, completely out of the blue. I'd done a schools program on the life and times of Martin Luther King, which had been seen in a hotel room in London by the president of CBS TV, who was about to leave that position and start CNN. And he wanted to meet with me. We met, got on well, and I went to Atlanta and spent 2 years in Atlanta, Georgia, broadcasting to the nation on TBS, the Turner Broadcasting System. And it was exciting times. I must admit, I did enjoy it. And it was something that people were kind of surprised by, perhaps as much as I was, the fact that I got this great opportunity, because here you can become pigeonholed and known for doing one thing. And it doesn't often allow you to do other things, whereby in America, anything is possible. So that was good. When I came back, and the reason I came back was I was starting to get homesick for Britain. And we lived in a fabulous house had all the trappings of kind of commercial success that you get on TV in America. They provided a couple of cars and we had a big swimming pool, and it was really a great place for showing off. And so that was exciting, but I was missing friends. My wife was okay, but she obviously had friends that she was missing, and you couldn't do anything without a car because you didn't walk to shops. Nobody did that or does that in America. And so I got the opportunity to come back from Doreen Davis, who, again, there she was, the same lady who came to see me in Luxembourg, then comes over to see me in Atlanta. We had a similar conversation, and she brought me back, and I started doing the early evening show on Radio 1. Which in those days, the profile wasn't very high, but we worked very hard over a period of 3 years with Peel working on one side of me, and it would have been on the other side of me probably Steve Wright, somebody like that. So I was there kind of like bridging the gap between the two cultures. My favorite memories are to do really with the banter and practical jokes that we got up to, I think. Some of the things that we would do for example, there's the incident I remember well of Noel Edmonds setting the Top 40 script on fire when I was doing the chart program from Southampton University once. So that I won't forget the incident because it was talked about for some time afterwards. And I was a victim to practical jokes for some reason. But anyway, I enjoyed it very much coming back. I was welcome back and felt like I belonged very much going back to the family. And it gave me the opportunity to work very closely with John Peel, which was obviously never to be forgotten. And it was just a wonderful partnership that we struck up for us anyway on the radio and, of course, on Top of the Pops. When I think of John Peel, one of the images I think of is this bearded fellow from Merseyside, lying on the floor outside the studio, crying with joy because his beloved team, Liverpool, had just won the European Cup. And he came in to me and he said, "Kid," he always called me kid because he said, "If it's good enough for your wife, it's good enough for me." And he walked in the studio and he said, "You're going to have to start the show. I can't go on." And I knew he something was up, because normally he would come and sit and have an Indian meal or sit and chat for the last hour of my show, and I would sit and would behind and talk to him, not on air, just stuff. And the fact that he hadn't turned up, I thought to myself, well, he'll be in the racks room or some other area where technicians will be watching the feed from the football game that Liverpool were in. And he was so struck with joy that he ended up in a heap on the floor. He was and he was actually very teary eyed. So when I think of Peely, I think of that, someone who is nakedly emotive and not afraid for people to discover you know, what he was like, or because all you had to do was turn on the radio, and he was that person. He wasn't, you know, it wasn't an act. Once I said to him, we were talking about DJs, and which we always ended up talking about DJs and radio programs, and I made the comment, I said, I would listen to you for you as opposed to some of the music that you play, which was pretty eclectic stuff. And he said, no, I don't want people to listen because of me. I want them to listen to the music. And he actually wasn't being falsely modest. He really wanted that. He wanted people to think of him because of what he was playing, as opposed, and what he was playing that he loved most of all were the Undertones, Teenage Kicks. The most, I suppose, vivid memory I have is doing a program called Round Table, which I did every week for a few years. And on one particular edition of Round Table, my guests were Michael Jackson and George Harrison. Michael Jackson to promote Off the Wall, and George Harrison was there because he was about to release a new album. And that was fantastic, and to have them both in the studio at the same time. And because Round Table had the power or profile to do that, people would fly in from other countries to just to be part of it, because we built it up to that level, and it was in a good format, an easy format, and an artist loved talking about obviously themselves, their own music, and other people's music, and it was just that was the format. So and it worked really well, and Michael Jackson and George Harrison kind of got it as soon as they came in, and it went well. And somewhere somebody will have recordings and photographs of that roundtable and other roundtables that I did with other stars, not as big as Jackson and Harrison, but still significant. The trouble is with me, I don't collect things, don't keep things. The way that Peel was a great cataloger of things that happened, and he has a huge areas at his home of memories of bands, sessions, all that kind of stuff, interviews. And I never did, for some reason. It never struck me as a good idea at the time. And looking back on it, would have been a great idea if I'd kept the interviews that I did. My favorite artist that did a session for my show, they also did one for Peely, were the Smiths. I was such a big fan of theirs. Peel played them first, but I kind of picked up on it quite quickly afterwards, because I just thought this band needs to be heard. I just thought they were so good, and lyrically and musically very, very strong. And so we got some sessions. And one of the sessions that they did for me and Peel collectively became an album, a Smiths Live album. So that was quite nice. I enjoyed the road shows. I enjoyed what happened outside the radio programs, because the radio programs were well put together by the producers, who were dedicated to making the show sort of include the listener at home and not exclude anybody who wasn't at the Newquay Beach at that time. I used to be sort of numbstruck by the people that would come to some of these road shows. I mean, tens of thousands of people would come along to see nothing other. In those days, we didn't really have many artists on the bill, but they'd be coming along to see a DJ playing records, and some people would dance. But there was such a buzz about Radio 1 at the time that was seen by people as a good thing to do, and the fact that I was part of it was very exciting. And being on the road show, and that again was another place where or another area that people used to have a great deal of fun at other people's expense, but it was good fun, and it was really great, I think, for the profile of Radio 1, because we'd be hitting these big seaside areas, and people would be taking with them souvenirs that they were either given or bought back home. So as a marketing exercise, it was a success. The nickname Kid came about because I was the youngest presenter on Radio Luxembourg, and a DJ that I would go on to work alongside, Paul Bennett, he one day just started calling me the Kid, because there was another David, a guy called Dave Christian, who was a DJ on Luxembourg. So that was one David too many as far as they were concerned. So they said, you should be Kid Jensen. And I liked it right away. And it was when I came back from America where they'd felt that being a news anchor, Kid Jensen probably wasn't the best name. So I was reverted back to my real name, David Jensen. And when I came back here, Derek Chinnery, the controller of Radio 1, thought that I was of an age that I should be David, that I should be Kid Jensen and not David Jensen. And so people through the years have said to me, hi, Kid, how you doing? Oh, sorry, we shouldn't call you Kid. Actually, I always liked it. I always liked the name. And I don't know how it came out, or people said, don't call him Kid, he really hates it. Because I really like it, because it's unique. So I'm grateful to Paul Bennett for giving me the name. As well, I've mentioned Paul Bennett's name, and he's the funniest guy that most DJs that have worked with him would say the same thing. There's no funnier guy on the planet. When he's in full flow at a dinner party, people would not just be laughing, they'd be convulsed with laughing. Because he's got a great sense of humor, and he's a great mimic as well, so I have memories of that. But most of the memories are good. I mean, the fact that it is kind of like a cutthroat business outside of Radio 1, or can be, because people do anything to try and get on the air. I've just been lucky to go my own way, I suppose, in that sense. And people have thankfully called at times when I needed a phone call and to offer me maybe something. So that's worked out pretty well. I look back on the Radio 1 era with a great deal of affection. Most of it is tied up with working with Peely and the hours we spent together.